This Miami Heat team is authoring one of the great runs ever. Only one 8 seed has ever made the NBA Finals. That was the 1999 New York Knicks. They did so because it was a shortened labor stoppage season, a 50-game sprint. This Heat team, though, is doing it in a full 82-game schedule, and they're a win away with a 3-0 series lead of the Conference Finals. Joining us this morning on the show to discuss and dissect both Conference Finals, our friend from SiriusXM NBA Radio, Justin Termini. JT, good morning.
Ben, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Last night, after a 2-0 series lead, both wins in Boston, the Heat were still underdogs, not only in the series, but in the game itself. At home, they were plus 4.5. Why has it taken so long for people to come around and respect Miami?
Yeah, I don't even understand those type of like analytical pages or like the Vegas and the way they're putting these odds up, because I remember last year I'm sitting at the NBA Finals and I picked Golden State to win because the experience factor, and I think Golden State was given a 14% chance to win on like the ESPN stat sites, and a 14% chance to win the championship. Celtics were given 86%, and Golden State won it, and once again it's been proven to be inaccurate this year. And I guess it's just based off what we saw in the regular season, right? Miami stunk during the regular season. Boston was awesome. Boston's been here last year. And I think it's just a difference in mentality, because talent, Boston has it, but mentality and coaching are definitely in Miami's favor.
What happened last night to a game that probably decided the season, the Celtics no-showing?
I mean, and you've seen this, like you followed the Celtics throughout the course of the last couple of years. And one of the reasons I thought like Ime Udoka did a tremendous job last season is because he was like their tough guy, right? He was the guy that held everybody accountable. I'm not sure that they have that with Joe Mazzulla. And it looked like a team that just gave up, unfortunately. In Miami, you know, is professional, whereas you run into like Philadelphia, I think, has some of the same issues that Boston does with like the lack of professionalism, and it makes you scratch your head how Philadelphia lost like a game 6 to this Celtics team on their home floor when they were up 3-2 with a chance to close. But I think it's just Miami being a far better coach team and a far more professional team. But yeah, that was embarrassing last night.
If Jason Tatum's the best player on your roster and he's garbage in the fourth quarters of the first two games and then gets benched in the third game last night of the fourth quarter, what does that say about Jason Tatum?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I think the first couple of the series, especially against Philadelphia, Tatum didn't show up in the first half, right? Then he turns it on in the second half and was spectacular down the stretch. Here it's been the opposite, where he hasn't been any good for the fourth quarters, but he's been pretty good the first three quarters. Last night, obviously, he was bad the entire game. But let's not also forget Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown's about to make $300 million, at least if the Celtics give him this contract. He made second-team All-NBA, which means people thought he was one of the 10 best players in the league this year. And while I don't think Tatum has been great, like, he kind of held up his end of the bargain in the first two games outside of the fourth quarter. Like, you need some help from Jaylen Brown. Look at the Nuggets series, right? It was like the first two games, Nikola Jokic was the best player on the floor through the first three quarters in each game. Then Jamal Murray took over in the fourth. Then you saw in game three, Jamal Murray was fantastic in the first three quarters. Jokic really didn't do anything, but then Jokic picked it up in the fourth quarter. So those guys are kind of picking each other up. You haven't seen that in Boston, where Jaylen Brown's been non-existent for all, 12 quarters so far in this series.
Should the Celtics bring back Joe Mazzulla next year?
I don't think they should. I think they probably will. It'd be pretty gutsy to like give him an extension and then fire him. I don't really blame Joe Mazzulla. He was thrown into the spot, but he's clearly in over his head. I blame more Brad Stevens for giving him that contract without seeing him coach a postseason game. So I think they should remove him, but I don't know if they will, just because of like the optics and the fact they invested so much money in him midseason with this long-term contract extension.
Justin Termini, the NBA Today on SiriusXM NBA Radio. Last night, the Celtics get embarrassed. And for the Heat, how are they the one franchise that finds all of these G League and undrafted guys and develop them into winners? I mean, every team has one of those guys. But how do the Heat collect them and have them all step up?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I credit the coach, Eric Spoelstra. I think he's been fantastic. And it's really weird because if Miami's going to get guys like that, then it's pretty much game over because there's no place in the sport that's easier to recruit like a free agent than Miami, right? Like, they were kind of a mess a couple of years ago. They had Udonis Haslam and Tyler Johnson and Deion Waiters, and there were bad contracts signed by Pat Riley. But then Jimmy Butler wants to go down there and play for whatever reason, whether he liked the quote-unquote culture or Eric Spoelstra, or he just wanted to live the life style down in Miami. Like, he kind of got him out of the hole where he gives you your one star and then they're surrounded by all these guys that step up. But it's amazing, just because Duncan Robinson, you look at what he did during the regular season, the guy never played. It looked like one of the worst contracts in the sport. Then he's going out there yesterday, and not only is he knocking down threes, but he's like penetrating and beating the Celtics defense. And he looks like one of the better players in the league. So it's amazing how they find these guys and how they step up at the right time. Like Kyle Lowry, for two consecutive years, people are complaining down there in Miami about how he's out of shape. It's a horrible contract, and his career looked over last year in the postseason, and now all of a sudden he's back to playing like Kyle Lowry of maybe 3 or 4 years ago when he's making a run to the title with Toronto.
When it comes to the Nuggets, is there any part of you that fears that if they get to the NBA Finals, or when they get to the NBA Finals, defensively they'll have enough lapses and that'll be their Achilles heel?
Well, that's what I thought, like, heading into the postseason, and I think they've stepped it up here. And you saw it, like, the last couple of months. I think they, like, turned off the switch because they were comfortably ahead in the Western Conference and nobody was pushing them. But they're outside of the top 15 defensively, and usually it takes a top 10 team to win a championship. Like, a top 10 regular season defense translates to the postseason. But then I look on the other side, and I'm looking at Miami, and yeah, okay, typically you don't see a 7th or an 8th seed make a run to the finals either. So I think it's two, like, outliers. And I probably trust what I see in Denver more than I trust in Miami. But yes, I thought heading into the postseason their weak point was going to be their defense. Thus far, that hasn't been an issue.
We didn't see Jamal Murray over the last 2 years because of the injury. If Jamal Murray was healthy, would we have seen this caliber of Nuggets contention the last two seasons as well? Did this run really begin in the bubble and Nuggets have been this good minus Murray for the last 3 years?
Yeah, and I thought it was like the year after the bubble, so I didn't think they were better than the Lakers when they lost to them in the bubble, but I actually picked them to get to the NBA Finals as soon as they made that Aaron Gordon trade, and then a couple of weeks later, Murray got hurt, and then they're gone the last 2 years. They didn't stand a chance, but I thought that that team had a legit shot to go to the NBA Finals, and I think they would have over, like, Phoenix in 2021 if Jamal Murray didn't get hurt. So I think the Western Conference really did luck out with Phoenix in 2021 and then Golden State last year, because this version of Denver is better than that team that won the championship last year for Golden State. And to me, it's no surprise. Like, for Jamal Murray to play at this level in the postseason after the regular season he had is a little bit of a surprise to me, but it's not a surprise to me that, like, Denver is a dominant and legitimate contender, because they do have the best player in the sport, in my estimation, in Jokic.
This is going to change Jokic's legacy if he wins a championship, right? I mean, he was a two-time MVP already, but if he also wins a championship, that elevates him to a place that I think a lot of casual fans have not put him at yet.
No, absolutely. And a lot of, not even just the casual fans, but the talking heads as well. And I think maybe the most embarrassing rhetoric that we've seen in the NBA in a while has surrounded him, and, like, why he's winning these MVP awards, whether he's a stat padder or not. The guy can't win. I mean, he was missing his second and third best players the last 2 years and winning almost 50 games, okay? And then he goes into the postseason. What, Will Barton is his second leading scorer. Monty Morris is playing a major role. Like, Will Barton's on the precipice of being out of the league. So, yeah, it'll change the rhetoric. It's not really changing it for me, because I, you know, listen, I get stuff wrong. Miami's making me look like an idiot. I thought they'd lose in 4 or 5 games in the first round, okay? So I get stuff wrong too, but I was not wrong on this guy. Like, I enjoy watching him play more than any other player in the league. I've always felt that he was one of the two or three best players in the sport, and now I'm glad that he's on a national stage getting that type of recognition, because, yes, it will it should change the rhetoric around him.
Justin Termini, SiriusXM NBA Radio, joins us. Finally, what's the thing that annoys you most about Bogut?
Andrew Bogish, I mean, the ego. I mean, he's like he'll call me after shows that you guys do, you know, he'll say he should be doing this, he should be doing that, he should get more leeway than you give him. He thinks you're a difficult boss, but doesn't have the guts to say it to your face. So, you know, it's just the fact that he's got to do stuff behind people's back that really bothers me, and I'm sure he talks behind my back to you guys as well.
Justin Termini, check him out, the NBA Today on SiriusXM NBA Radio. Thanks, JT.
All right, farewell, fellas.
Okay.